The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, a cornucopia of delight. World Cup qualifiers, it's crunch time around the planet. We ask, can 11 Englishmen actually beat 11 Montenegrins? And we discuss Jack Wilshere on Englishness. Is it what's he been smoking, or was he spot on about not allowing just anyone to roll up? Meanwhile, there's Sid in Spain, Gus Poyet at Sunderland. Is the stadium of light at the end of the tunnel? And Cardiff beginning to shed bits. Now that's what happens when you get a tan and go an uncomfortable shade of red. All that plus totally interesting posts from listeners in this Football Weekly Extra. It's a special show today. Barry Glendening's hyped about it, aren't you, Barry?
Yep.
Hey, Jacob Steinberg of controversial bed-making fame.
Yeah, hello.
All right. And Jonathan Wilson, here to handle those tricky foreign nations who may be featuring in relevant games this weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, good. You're looking well?
Thanks, you too.
Good. Lovely. Today's show full of interesting facts, as ever. Here's one from Taking Back Sunday. A Clark's Nutcracker bird can store up to 30,000 pine nuts for the winter in over 6,000 different locations across 300 square miles. And, wait for it, it can remember where at least 70% of them are.
Yeah, but Harry Redknapp can store 30,000 pounds in his tracksuit, so, you know.
Right, it's interesting, that. Are you enjoying his book?
No. Oh.
All right. England, they're top of the group. Barry?
Yep. They are.
All right. They're taking Montenegro. Two home games. Everybody knows the deal. Have to win these two to be absolutely certain, because they are 1 point ahead of Ukraine and Montenegro. England are taking on Montenegro at Wembley. Ukraine are facing Poland. And if Poland win that game, they'll be back in contention. But it's all about England beating Montenegro, something which they've never managed to do, Jonathan Wilson.
No, they haven't. Three previous attempts, three draws.
Can they win this time?
Well, they should do. I mean, they should beat Montenegro anyway, but Montenegro without Vucinic, without their goalkeeper Bojovic, Sir Palexic comes in, who's played three games in the last 3 years, having been banned for not reporting match fixing in a game which he mysteriously let in four goals in the first half, which was never proven. All his problem was he didn't report it. I mean, this is a weak Montenegro, even by Montenegro standards.
And so. Yet...
And yet they will be well organised, they will be awkward, and England play always with neurosis on their shoulders.
Right, but there's Wayne Rooney back on the field, and Sturridge conceivably joining him as well, so...
Well, I mean, the problem with international football is you never get any continuity, so I don't think England are in a particularly bad position. I don't think they played that badly in these qualifiers. In a sense, it's the order of the fixtures that's created the situation. That everybody's going, oh, well, they haven't beaten any team in the group apart from Moldova and San Marino. Well, yeah, but they only played one of the other teams at home. So essentially, you're talking about one draw at home to Ukraine. Okay, three away draws, but none of those are bad results in and of themselves. I guess ideally you'd have won one of them, but it's in a position where you have to beat Montenegro and Poland at home to go through. You should do it. I mean, it's not a bad position to be in.
You concur, Jacob?
Well, I think that drawing away against those teams isn't necessarily the worst results. I think it's more the way that they did play.
Yeah, having taken the lead against Poland and Montenegro, absolutely. That's fair enough.
The lack of game intelligence, probably, that was evident in those matches would be the more worrying thing, and makes people wonder whether they would have the mentality to go and win these games. Because they probably have enough talent to beat Poland and Montenegro.
So, my problem, I guess, is always an issue with international football, is that people hark back to results from 6 months ago as if they're relevant today, which you never do for club side, because you've got a lot of other fixtures in the way. So actually, England's last game, I thought the 0-0 draw in Ukraine, all right, it wasn't a fantastic game to watch, but England's job in that match was to stop Ukraine winning. And they did. They were almost too effective in doing that, and it made Ukraine look like a really bad side. The Ukraine team had scored 18 goals in the previous four matches, nine of them admittedly against San Marino, but still, yeah, they'd won 4-0 in Montenegro, four wins in a row. England's job was to draw that game 0-0, and they did that supremely efficiently.
Well, I guess the question would be then, is Roy Hodgson's job to secure the bare minimum results to get into the World Cup, or is it to fashion something that actually will do well in Brazil? And certainly from the second criteria, that's, I think, what the criticism was about.
Yeah, but it's international football. He gets a week six times a year to work with the squad. Qualification about muddling through, you judge him on what he does in the 3 weeks he actually has with the squad before the tournament next year.
Right. Man Who Was Sunday on that very note says, would love to hear Jonathan's recipe for a competitive England in Brazil next year. Threw that one at you, didn't I?
Well,
Roy Hodgson gets a week, you get 10 seconds.
I don't think the team at the minute looks that bad.
Right.
Cahill and Jagielka might not be ideal at centre-back, but they've played five games in a row together. They've improved over those five games. So that's a basis. You've got two decent options in either full-back position. I mean, maybe not brilliant options, but decent. I think a midfield three of Gerrard, Lampard and Wilshere is energetic and combative. It provides a shield for defence. And if you can get a front three of Rooney, Sturridge and Welbeck, there's the possibility there, and it'll take time for them to gel. But that fluidity is potentially very exciting. So you have a functional back seven, you have an exciting front three, that might work.
I notice, Barry, he hasn't included Janusay in there. That's very retrograde. It's not really forward-thinking, Jonathan, is it?
Well, I think the recipe for English success in Rio involves a lot of sabotage on other teams.
Oh, yeah. You know. Some hard tackling, perhaps.
Well,
I keep trying to steer the conversation to Jack Wilshere, you're noticing.
All right, well, I mean, this Janusay thing is just stupid. It's a media confection that was dreamt up in the press room at the Stadium of Light last week.
On the basis of one game?
On the basis of one game that a kid played very well.
One half, you could argue, because he wasn't very good first.
Well, I'm glad you said that, John, because I got some stick for saying that.
Hadn't they been looking at him, the FA, for a couple of months, though?
Why?
I don't know why, though, because...
Well, but they had, though.
Under the agreement with the Home Nations, they cannot make him play for England. Yeah. There's no evidence he wants to play for England.
Well, this is the thing. He has never expressed the slightest interest.
I don't know if they're even interested.
And it seems to be incredibly arrogant of the English media and FA that they should think he might want to play for them. Why would he?
Right.
Well, I mean, he's turning down Belgium because he feels Kosovan. And he's waiting for Kosovo to become a FIFA member so he can play for Kosovo. If he's not going to commit to a nation where he essentially grew up, he's saying, why would he commit to England? It makes no sense.
Okay, and here's another question. What's the point of having nation taking on nation in events like the World Cup if you then get upset when Jack Wilshere says, but it should be Englishmen in the team? I think that's entirely in line with the whole point of national football.
I thought Wilshere was terribly stitched up by that. I mean, to say there should be Englishmen in the team is, I just think, obvious. Now, how you define Englishmen, I guess, is a slightly more complicated issue. But, if you're born in the country, clearly that's fine.
If you have familial links,
clearly that's fine. And then, the comparison between Janusay and some of the cricketers is ludicrous, because people like Peterson, Trott, Pryor, all of them whom were born outside England, they all have British parents. So, that's very simple. Or if you move to a country early-ish in life and you make some kind of commitment to that country by living there, that's also an issue. And that's harder to judge. But a kid who's been...
Janusay's come here to work, years, basically, to play 2 years, football. And he's played for Manchester United. It's just
The example of Eduardo, I think, is a slightly complicated case in that he came very, very early to play football, was sort of... His agents abandoned him, and he was... Zdravko Mamic, who, in almost every other respect, is a dreadful man, did look after him. He has a commitment to Croatia.
He used to live at the stadium, though.
He lived in the storeroom at the stadium, which is... in Zagreb.
Yeah.
He married a Croatian woman. He's clearly, in many respects, he is Croatian. So that is a complicated case. And I guess you judge it on a case-by-case basis. But somebody in their mid-teens who comes to England to play football to suddenly kind of become English in 5 years, I think is very...
Which is
worrying.
Why no one's really taking it seriously.
I think Wilshere's been really... He has. I sympathise with what has happened to him, and I think maybe what he said hasn't come out in the best way, probably. It's maybe a little bit confused in some of the things that have been said. And just when you see the headlines and he says and it says English for Englishmen, England for Englishmen, it kind of has those negative connotations. But when you see that specific quote on the page, it does look bad. And then when you read what he's saying... It makes sense.
If you don't want to do it that way, what you do is you have a competition, which you don't even have to hold in Qatar, uniquely, where you take best 11s from leagues and face them. Well, the way they used to, actually. They used to have a representative of Serie A, and the English First Division used to have a representative 11 that would take on other teams on occasion.
Yeah, in sort of exhibition games, yeah.
Yeah,
I think that'd be fun. That's how schoolboy football used to work, which is why Ryan Giggs played for England schoolboys. Even though he's never been qualified to play for England.
Right. Well, if you like, little bit later on, we could look at who your Premier League 11 would be. And I might offer a Serie A 11. And Sid could beat us both by playing a Liga 11. Moving on. So basically, England beat Montenegro.
Well, England. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Jacob. Not easily, though. Mm-hmm. The tone of voice, slightly different.
All right. England to manage to get a win?
Yes. All right. I prefer that.
Jacob?
Just about.
All right.
I think they'll beat Montenegro and Poland pretty easily.
Jacob, just thinking, you've made your bed. You better lie in it.
I'm not in the flat yet.
All right.
Yeah.
Good. In a second or two, let's have a look at the rest of Europe. Rest of Europe time. Wow, this is complicated, isn't it? I'm looking down. There are all these groups here. You've got a printout. Well done, Jacob. All I can see from my notes is that Iceland could go through. Is that right, Jacob?
They could. Sorry, I'll be Jacob.
Yeah, you be Jacob.
Tonight, Matthew, I will be Jacob Steinberg. Well, Switzerland at the top of that group on 18 points. No, right. Certain to go through. And then you have Iceland on 13, Slovenia on 12, Norway on 11, and Albania on 10. So they're all vying for second place.
Must
be the easiest qualification group in European or in World Cup history, not counting the one Australia used to come out of all the time.
Right. Or England's, perhaps.
What that means, I was doing some research yesterday, and I found a Trinidadian newspaper that about 6 months ago proudly announced that Trinidad and Tobago were guaranteed to keep their record as the smallest ever nation to qualify for a World Cup. But actually, Montenegro, if they were to get through, are half the size
of Trinidad and Tobago,
by population. And Iceland, half even that, only 320,000 people. So if only to stick the hubris of the Trinidadians back in their faces.
Right.
Take that, Chris Birchall.
Let's just finish part two right there. I can't think of anything that's going to beat that.
Would Iceland be the prettiest country ever to...
I've not been to Iceland. Barry, you have?
No.
Oh. I don't know.
But I know what it looks like.
Croatia's lovely, isn't it? And Italy's quite special.
Brazil's quite good.
Hmm?
Brazil.
Big, though, isn't it? Yeah. Covers all bases.
Yeah. Producer Ben offers the fact that it'd be the first nation with a lesbian prime minister to qualify for the World Cup. Right. Okay. How about Group F? Portugal v Israel on Friday. And Israel also stand a chance, do they not? Still? Oh, no, they don't really.
Well,
it's
they
between
do
Russia
technically,
and,
but do I mean, it's a bit of, you know, it's an outside chance.
But it's Russia or Portugal for the first place.
Yeah, and Russia, I think they've got Luxembourg and Azerbaijan to play. They win both of those, they go through.
Right.
So Fabio Capello turns out is quite a good manager.
All right.
But Russia are wobbling. I mean, they were cruising that group, and then they lost in Portugal in June, and then lost to Northern Ireland, which is a result that could end up biting them. But I mean, basically, they've got to win Azerbaijan if they can do that. And at the minute, Azerbaijan are below Luxembourg in the groups. So.
Right. Tell us about Ireland, who do have a chance still of making it, and they're away to Germany.
Springs.
Yeah. They have an outside chance of making Brazil if results go their way.
They have no chance.
Right, okay.
Well, they're playing, I presume they have to beat Germany for...
Yeah.
That's one of the results that has to go their way.
And Sweden have to lose badly against Austria, I think.
Right. Well, I would say the chances of that happening are incredibly slim.
Right.
Ireland played Germany. They got beaten 6-1 the last time.
Mm.
And yeah, it's not really a great deal to say about it. They don't have a manager at the moment. Noel King, the manager of the under-21s, is overseeing them. He's brought several players back into the fold, including not this season's Nottingham Forest sensation, Andy Reid.
Good news. Europe, well, there'll be games and there'll be results and we'll know what happens by Monday. We'll already have a clearer picture. So how about the rest of the world, Jonathan? What do we got from that? I'm excited by Mexico taking on Panama because this El Tri could miss out of the World Cup.
Yeah, and they've changed manager again. Vucetic has come in. King Midas, as he's known, having won 5 Mexican titles with 4 different clubs. Mm. And they're fifth in that group, but they're level on pointing with Panama, so 2 wins and they should still be okay.
Wow. All right. Well, you're
and even if they finish fourth in that group, it's a playoff against New Zealand. So.
Yeah. You have to work hard not to qualify from that group, really.
You really do, but to be fair, they've put in the effort. I mean, I think they've won 1 of 9 qualifiers, I think. One of 8, sorry.
They played 8, beat Jamaica. That was their only win. Yeah. I think they've had 3 scoreless draws at home and scored very, very few goals. This Vucetic is their third manager in 3 games. And
this after, was it the loss at home to Honduras? Oh, and then, of course, they lost away to
the US.
Yeah.
I did a blog on that, which should be up on the site today.
Brilliant, Barry. Any other tidbits from that?
Well, he brought back some players who had fallen out with the previous manager, including...
Rafael Marquez.
He tried to bring up Carlos Vela, but he claimed he wasn't fit enough to participate in these games, despite the fact that he's banging in goals for Real Sociedad on a quite regular basis. He hasn't played for Mexico in about 2 years or more, and all his compatriots are very upset with him. They think he wants to be Spanish. Hmm.
Did he try Janusze? Because
it's a thought. He was once swaddled in a poncho.
There you go. In other rest of world qualifying news, well, Africa, that's a bit complicated. It doesn't actually get resolved in the next week or so, does it?
No, 5 two-legged playoffs, which the first legs are this weekend.
Right, and there's some huge games there. You've got Tunisia. What are they doing there? Poor old Cabo Verde.
Yeah, you say poor old Cabo Verde, but it's their own fault. I mean, essentially, they had a player sent off in a game that was subsequently awarded to them as a walkover.
Yeah.
And they assumed that the suspension he incurred from that wouldn't then apply, but they didn't bother to check it.
Ah.
So they played him, and it did apply, and so they got a game award against them in Tunisia.
Right.
He seemed to have been quite smart about playing the rules, knowing what the rules were.
Yeah.
They went through as a result. And they play Cameroon, for whom Samuel Eto'o is now back out of retirement for the 84th time in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Whoever comes through that tie will be the weakest African team at the World Cup.
Really?
They're both awful, yeah.
Are they? Okay. And Senegal are taking on Ivory Coast. It all kicked off last time they faced each other.
Yeah, so Senegal can't play their home game in Dakar. They can't remember where they're playing it, but it's somewhere not Senegal because of the riot. I mean, those photographs were extraordinary of the Ivorian team in the centre circle with riot police sort of around them with shields up to protect them as fans ran amok.
And Senegal have Demba Ba isn't even in the squad, and
no, they have a strict policy of only picking players who are playing regularly. But they actually have too many forwards. It's quite a good way of whittling them down. So I don't think that's too big a loss for them.
Okay,
Burkina Faso. Who, I mean, they've only until this year they'd only been through the group stage of the Cup of Nations once, and that was when they hosted it. So Paul Put, the Belgian, has done miraculous things there. A man who served a 3-year ban for match fixing.
How big is Burkina Faso?
Oh, in terms of population?
Yeah.
I would guess around 15 million. Do you want me to check?
If it's that big, it's not going to feature in that whole Iceland, Trinidad and Tobago.
No, it's bigger than that.
It's big, is it? But who's their best player?
They have a very good chance of going through, though, because Algeria were rubbish at the Africa Cup of Nations.
But that was 6 months.
Burkina Faso got the final, didn't they?
Yeah. I think... Yeah, but yes, you're right. If they reproduce the form of then yes, Burkina Faso do have a great chance. And actually, I think to back them in the home leg, I think they were something like 2.46 this morning. It's definitely, that looks value to me. But Algeria...
Sorry, we should have paid more attention. To back
Burkina Faso to win the first leg, which is in Ouagadougou.
Oh.
But Algeria have improved a lot since Vahid Halilhodžić came in, and they're playing much more open, attractive football. So... big contrast in styles.
Right. Tell us something we don't know, Jonathan.
Ethiopia?
Well, yeah, tell us about Ethiopia then. Go on.
Well, Ethiopia, again, it's a great, one of the great great traditional powers of African football, won the Cup of Nations in 62. And again, they've come from nowhere, having this is their first qualification for Cup of Nations this year since 1982.
Wow.
And they play Nigeria, the African champions. Lost 2-0 to them in South Africa in January.
What's behind their return to kind of...
Being drawn to South Africa, I think, largely. South Africa's ability to shoot themselves in the foot is extraordinary. But they've only got 4 professional players.
Who? Ethiopia?
Yeah.
As you probably know, Jimbo, Saladin Said is their star player. He plays in Egypt, I think.
Really?
Or Belgium. There seems to be some confusion.
That's a bit confusion.
Let's hope he's clear.
You'd hope so. Well, as long as he turns up for this game.
Who are they playing, Ethiopia, then?
They're playing Nigeria, African champions. But as a spectacle, I think that could be the biggest game this weekend, because the first game's in Addis, and the Ethiopian fans in South Africa were just brilliant. That they incredibly noisy, incredibly passionate, all waving pictures of Haile Selassie. It's a very, very different experience to be in a crowd of Ethiopians. So I mean, it's a shame they're playing Nigeria because I like Steve Keshi a lot and I kind of want him to go to the World Cup. I'd quite like Ethiopia to be there for their fans.
Yeah. Wow, absolutely brilliant. Hey, Jacob, Colombia, Chile.
What about it?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of the hipster's choice, is it not?
That is South American action, isn't it? Yeah.
But the big game in South America is Chile, Ecuador, Uruguay anyway, isn't it?
Sure, yeah, surely.
Exactly. I've got that written down for later on.
Okay.
So
hang on, is it Ecuador or Uruguay?
Ecuador,
it's
Uruguay.
In Ecuador.
Yeah, yeah, that's what's the difference, because yeah, they're up in the air.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. But Uruguay hanging on to that fifth place at the moment, and they've come back from that terrible start they had.
And Ecuador are where?
They're fourth. Two points clear of Ecuador, only taking 2 points in four games.
Right.
And the fifth place team, Chicha
Benitez, going to the playoff, don't they?
With Jordan.
Yeah.
Right.
Ecuador, I mean, not only is their form iffy, but Chicha Benitez's death has clearly had a major impact on them. This game has been key to qualifying the last three World Cups. They always play them in the same order in South America for some reason. So in 2001, they drew 1-1 for Ecuador to go through, and Uruguay went in the playoff. 2005, they drew 0-0, which got both of them through. And 2009, Diego Forlán scored a late penalty to put Uruguay through at Ecuador's expense. So there's history there.
How much of an effect will the altitude, or is it likely to have?
No, it will definitely. I mean, that's
because Uruguay desperately need to win this.
Well, I think they'd happily take fifth in the playoff against Jordan. I mean, given where they were a few months ago. They got the Argentina last.
But they
last.
Could be joined by Venezuela.
They could be, but Venezuela's form's...
Their home form is Caracas, says producer Ben. He's quite literally on fire today. We'll talk more about another Uruguayan a little bit later on. I'm referring, of course, to Gustavo Poyet, who's now safely installed at the Stadium of Light. Your thoughts, etc., on that very shortly. Barry, Jonathan, Jacob, why not? Mm. But first, some music, and then the man they call Sid.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, you're Sid, and you know you are. You're Sid.
Very good.
And you know you are. How are you, Sid?
I'm okay, and I know I am. How are you?
Hey, I'm well as well, and all the better for hearing you. Where in the wide world of sports reporting do you join us today from?
From the very boring my desk in Madrid.
All right. You say
I was at
boring.
The Spain squad the last couple of days, but they've headed off to Palma, Mallorca for the next 2 days, and sadly I'm not going with them.
All right, and Pepe Reina's in his Balotelli pyjamas.
Pepe Reina, brilliant. I mean, it was so much fun as well talking to him. It was on Onda Cero radio station. I was there for the last 15, 20 minutes of it. And just he's just very, very, very entertaining. And yeah, one of the things was that his new set of pyjamas is his Napoli shorts and his Balotelli shirt, which he swapped with Balotelli when he saved a penalty. And he said, you know, it's such a historic moment, I could not do it. I'd like to think that he washed the Balotelli shirt before he started wearing it in bed.
And the shorts, Sid, and the shorts.
And the shorts. Yeah. Tony Barrett from Rival Podcast of the Times said to me today, it's a good job he hadn't saved a penalty of a Chelsea player, because the idea of a Chelsea shirt in bed brings back far too many memories of David Meller.
We would say that's a kind of obvious comment they make. I wouldn't call it a rival podcast, would you, Sid? It's a podcast.
Well, to be a proper rival, you have to be at the same level, obviously, so it couldn't possibly be.
Yeah. Spain playing Belarus, speaking of at the same level, but even if they win this, Sid, and it's a bit of a long shot, admittedly, they still won't have tied up qualification. What on earth's going on?
No, because mathematically they need 4 points from the two remaining games. I must confess, I haven't got the table in front of me.
Don't worry about it, Sid, because Spain are going through, and they're the world champions, etc., and that...
Well, they should be going through, yeah. And obviously, as you can imagine, Jimbo, I'm very excited because Spain have a new player in the squad.
Exactly. Who is that new player?
It's Michu, and I'm very pleased for
him. All that Oviedo thing.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, also his performances, I think he deserved it anyway. I mean, quite apart from my own obvious screaming bias in this... I think he is a player who's potentially very, very useful for Spain, because he isn't a slightly different option yet. He's got the brains, the movement and the intelligence, I think, to be able to play with Spain. It's interesting, though, he got called up, as you probably know, because of the injury to David Villa. Also because of the fact that Spain haven't managed to tie up the Diego Costa thing
yet. I was just going to ask you about that, because that whole thing is obviously very much a flavour of the moment here in England with the Janice.
Yeah, because of the... I'm glad you said his name, because I couldn't begin to say... How do you say it, Janusai?
I have no idea. When I was looking up his name earlier, actually, I was stunned. Somebody posted in the correct way to pronounce... hang on a second. The correct way to pronounce Arsenal's Polish goalkeeper. Jonathan, do you know this one?
Szczęsny.
Fabianski. There's a little link to one of those. You press the button and it plays an audio file. And it was Wojciech Stensner.
Really?
Yeah.
I know there's a click on the E, which means you pronounce an N, as in like for Wenser. So it's Chesney, not Chesney, but.
Oh, all right.
Well, I'm still trying to work out how to pronounce James Richardson.
Yeah. As in the James Rodriguez
Hole. Yeah. Which I thought was brilliant. I love that, because you look at it, you go, he's James. I know it's James. Yeah, and if he wants to be called James, that's fine.
We're losing Barry. So Diego Costa.
is that a bad thing or a good thing?
Hey, yeah, good point. Anyway, Diego Costa, so is that real? Are they really going to try and get Diego Costa?
The Spanish Federation were explicit about this last week. They said that they wanted to call him up, that they'd spoken to him, that the only thing they were waiting for was a formal certificate from the Brazilians saying, yes, it's true, he's only played the two games that he's played for us as friendlies, and therefore he's pickable. But now, this poses two questions for me, and I honestly don't know the answer to which one of the two it is, or maybe even neither, which is, A, why did Spain not move a little bit quicker to make sure this paperwork came through in time? B, is the fact that it hasn't come through in time from the Brazilian Confederation slightly suspicious? Are they trying to put a spanner in the works? Although, of course, they haven't called him up. Apparently, Scolari was moaning about it, which is a bit rich coming from Scolari. But there's still time, of course, because one of the things about this idea that, well, he hasn't played any competitive games for Brazil, well, because Brazil don't have to qualify for the World Cup, there are not too many competitive games around. The next competitive game they play will be their first one at the World Cup, I think. I can't think of any others before then.
Yeah, it's a very good shout. Very good shout, because people are asking, why don't Brazil call him up? But you're right, it wouldn't make any difference. And he is worth it. Sid, would you say?
He's brilliant. I mean, personally, I have a problem with Spain calling him up. I mean, on one level, I keep saying to Spanish friends, Christ alive, you're double European champions and world champions, and you go and sign a Brazilian. You know, why not leave something for the rest of us? But there's also that question that this is someone who played for Brazil 7 months ago, twice. You know, it's not a case of this is someone who's been, in Spain from the age of 18, has developed through the Spanish system, which, by the way, is true, and has a Spanish passport and all the rest of it, and therefore fulfills the, which of course he does, and he still does even if he hadn't played for Brazil. But it's only 7 months ago that he played for Brazil. It's not like this is a kind of a well-thought-out long process. It's like, oh, hang on. I just wonder, if he's preparing the ultimate act of Brazilian brilliance, that he's going to play for Spain, get to the World Cup final, penalty shootout, Spain against Brazil, he'll run up, boot it into the crowd, pull off his Spain shirt, there'll be a Brazil shirt underneath, and he'll run around going, yes.
Wow, you really confused me there. But we didn't speak to you on Monday, he said, just resorting to some facts here. And he scored another two goals to keep Atletico on top of the table, no?
And he's brilliant. I mean, he really is brilliant. There were times, I was at Atletico on Sunday morning when they had their game against Celta, and there were times where, I'm going to use a horrible cliche which gets used far too often, there were times when it felt like, he was just unstoppable, to use the cliche, that he was unplayable. That Atletico were putting the ball long to him, and he was up against a couple of defenders, and his ability to roll people, his ability to kind of receive and have them try and tackle him, and have them end up on the floor instead of him, and come away with the ball, is exceptional. His movement's really, really clever. He doesn't get caught offside, despite the fact he always seems to be on the shoulder, because I think he drops a little bit to allow himself to run through. Very, very good at getting into space. Missed a couple of good chances at the weekend, actually, including a penalty, and was really, really annoyed with himself. There's some lovely footage of him for the sort of 5-10 minutes after the penalty, kicking the post, furious, shouting into the air, what an idiot. And then he gets a chance and finally gets a goal and settles. But he's very, very good indeed. But, as I say, to come back to the Spain question, it's not like Spain don't have good players.
That's so true. Barry, you got an important point about naturalised players.
And just that the new Mexican manager, now that he's in sort of dire straits and needs two wins, he's drafted in three naturalised Argentinians two games.
Sid, just before we go, would win, right? A Serie A 11 or a Premier League 11? If you put a three-team tournament together, you can chuck in a Bundesliga one if you want, or three-way football, which you play.
Chuck in a Bundesliga
a Bundesliga. An 11 from the Bundesliga against an 11 from... This is a four-team tournament. Who would win a four-team tournament that features a Bundesliga 11, a Premier League 11, a Serie A 11, and yes, why not, a Liga 11? Who would win, Sid?
Well, the team that has a forward line that says Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar would win, wouldn't it?
Would they? Well, what would their back line be? That's my question.
Well, I don't think there's too much wrong with the back line. And producer Ben actually prepared this, so this is unlike most pod gold. I did have a very brief think about this, although it was a very brief one.
Right,
not too much wrong with a back line of, for example, Dani Alves, Rafa Varane, Miranda, and Gareth Bale at left back.
Ooh. Have you learnt nothing, Sid? Nothing? Oh, Sid, that's fascinating. Fascinating.
And it's,
oh, go on, tell us the midfield then. Go on.
Well, I was just sort of toying with the midfield. I mean, Rangers fans won't like this, but I suppose the midfield has to be three Barcelona players. Busquets, here's the sort of the shift, though. For me, Busquets, Iniesta, Cesc, not Xavi.
Really?
Not right now. On what basis? Xavi looks tired to me.
Really? And Cesc looks better than Xavi?
Cesc is playing really, really well. Really well.
Oh. All right, there's controversies, Sid Lowe there. Jacob, how would that fare against your tough-tackling Premier League 11?
Yeah, well, I've just got 11 Stoke players in there.
Great!
That's the question. Where's the game being played?
Yeah,
because if it is
crucial.
In Stoke...
Tuesday night, Stoke.
Brilliant. You won.
Every game. That's it.
Game over, man. Cool. Sid, thank you so much for joining us then. That was excellent.
My pleasure.
Right.
Okie-doke.
Oh, you're coming in next week?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I think I'm coming to see you on Thursday.
All right. What are you doing in London?
I'll actually be in Manchester the night before. I'm getting a specially early train to come and see you on London.
Brilliant. What are you doing?
I'm sensing booked.
It's worth pointing out, obviously, before we ruin people's dreams, but obviously I'm getting a train down to London ready for the launch off of the pod into orbit.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not that we record it in London or anything.
We could beam you up.
Yeah.
You could beam me up, yeah.
But why are you in London, Sid, promoting a book which is called Fear and Loathing in the Liga?
Yeah, I feel a bit rude because it feels to me like you've said this quite a few times on my behalf, and it's very kind of you, but yes.
Well, nobody's bought the book yet. We have to keep at it. Still out there.
It still exists, yeah.
Has it been plugged more often on this pod or on the Irish Times Second Captain's pod? So yeah, that's right.
I think it's only been plugged once on there. I don't know, unless they've done it when I haven't been on.
All right.
Maybe Jonathan might know.
Well, the new edition of Pyramid is out now, fully updated. The American version's also coming out soon.
What did you change for the American version? Bigger pictures?
Smaller words?
I've no idea what you changed.
Yeah. Jonathan, presume you do know the answer to this, in that this is what I asked the other day about the American version of mine.
Yeah.
They do Americanize the language.
Do they?
No, that's absolutely true. And then you have to go through and you realise that the team names, some of them become singular, some of them remain plural, and it's all inconsistent. It's a nightmare.
Right.
But the 30% new material in the new version of Pyramid.
Really?
Not just two chapters whacked on the end, but a little bit whacked on the front as well.
Really?
And a little bit to rewrite all the way through.
Wow, okay. Cool.
That is pretty exciting.
Thank goodness I didn't finish it the first time. Now I can...
Did you buy it? I don't care about it.
I bought the book.
Good. Don't care if you read it.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's cynical. Speaking of people getting hurt, by the way, because obviously, you know, they may have mentioned Jonathan and me on a rival podcast. I wondered if maybe they'd mentioned it on a talk sport radio show, Barry.
No, not yet.
All right.
But you're always welcome.
Anyway, thanks, Sid. And we'll see you in the flesh quite literally next week. Super stuff.
Yeah, sadly, I can't bring Stella on the plane, I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
Never mind. We can always just, you know, recycle some effects. Anyway, cheers, Sid. Bye for now,
Cheerio.
Then. Cheers,
bye,
then.
Bye.
All right, well, that was a part in itself, that Sid Lowe experience there. So we'll just have a bit more music, and then off we go with Miscellany, featuring Cardiff and Sunderland. Sunderland, big news this. Monday, was it, they announced Gus Poyet Monday night?
Yeah, and he was unveiled, like...
Like a Michael Jackson statue in the stadium.
Glamorous magician's assistant.
Cool.
On Tuesday.
Well, what do you think, Barry? Is that situation fixed?
Don't know.
Good.
I mean, it just shows a distinct lack of imagination, in my opinion. They're kind of...
Who did you want, then?
Well, I believe Marcelo Bielsa was interested in getting the job, and I'd absolutely love to have seen him in the role, and I know Jonathan would too. But... You know, any time there's a position up for grabs, the same old names get mentioned and one of them gets it. And it's... I think they're very much replacing like with like, except a slightly less demented like with the previous like.
Former League One Manager of the Year, got Brighton up, got them into the playoffs.
Similar style of play.
Does anyone know what De Canio's style of play was based on?
Well, it was supposed to be pressing
That's not
game
really what
high intensity. Called. It certainly wasn't, but yeah, that's the one he was peddling.
The thing I never understood about Di Canio's tactics this season was why he kept playing a 4-4-2 when Sonnen was so open through the middle. I don't know why he didn't. Wait, I mean, as soon as Kevin Ball took over,
he's gone now. Anyway, let's hear about Poyet's tactics.
Well, I saw Brighton a few times. I saw them against... The last time I saw them in the flesh was against Newcastle in the third round of the Cup in January. And they were very good that day. And they had a very tidy midfielder in Liam Bridcutt. And fullbacks got forward. I don't think Will Buckley was playing. He's their sort of star player. But they were very good in possession-based game. And they beat Newcastle 2-0. Newcastle had quite a lot of players out, but they looked like a very competent side that knew what they were doing, and they were unfortunate not to go up last season and be in the Premier League for the first time of, you know, since 92 anyway.
Well, they're off to a horrendous start, and if you kind of extrapolate their form so far, you can see them getting 5.8 points, I think, over the course of the season.
The only thing you'd say about, I mean, it has been an awful start, really. But if you look at equivalent fixtures last season, they're only actually 3 points down.
Oh, okay.
The one thing I had with Poyet when he was at Brighton, there's that sometimes that kind of Martinez thing of being very pleased with the way you play, and especially when you lose. And there was a game when West Ham played them in the Championship. West Ham scored after about 10 minutes. Pounced on a mistake basically, and then sat back for the next 80 and let Brighton have all the ball. Brighton didn't create a single chance, and afterwards Poyet was talking about how well they played, and it was kind of, well, yeah, but you played well in your own half, and you know, you do need to have the cutting edge at the same time as all the passing, which Martinez
is. My question with him is whether he's a good manager in the wrong job, because when you look at teams that have started off this bad and actually survived. Most recent example, I guess, being Spurs when they had Wander Ramos in, and little known fact, etc., 2 points after 8 games. But the other one, it would be down the road at Newcastle when Hullett made a right pig's ear at the start, and they ended up, I think, 11th. This is what, 12, 13 years ago. But Bobby Robson came in then, Harry Redknapp this time. So is it that you need to bring in a safe, experienced pair of hands rather than someone who's never been at the top flight before?
Possibly. I mean, I've kind of just written the season off. I think the aim now is, if we're going to go down...
Is that why they got him, do you think, for Championship experience?
Well, possibly, yeah. If something are going to go down, let's go down properly with fewer than 11 points, which... Sunderland had the record for lowest points of 19. They improved that by getting 15. Derby came along and nicked the record with 11. I think this season we can do better than that. We'll take it down to single figures. And that's our record. We want it back. We want to be three of the four worst Premier League teams in history. And then... The Championship, we're very good at the Championship. Since the Premier League began, only three teams have won the Championship more than once. Sunderland, Newcastle and Reading. And Sunderland won it four times. Wow. That means our name's on that claret jug, which is the best trophy in world sport, 10 times. We win it 10 more times on there more than Liverpool. Now that's something to aim for.
Certainly is.
We could do that in 20 years. 20 years, and we can have our name on that trophy more than anybody else.
Brilliant.
While gradually whittling down the number of points.
Yeah.
Relegated by.
Wow.
That's a dream.
Yeah,
they could field an illegible player or something and end up with minors.
Well, I think the financial situation might sort that out.
Meanwhile, at 14th place, Cardiff. Can anyone explain what's happening there?
No, but what?
I can try.
Go on then, Barry.
The players wanted bonuses at the end of the season. It's traditional in most clubs that there's money put aside for player bonuses at the end of the season. This is on top of their wages and other bonuses they already get. Vincent Tan, Cardiff's slightly eccentric owner, said, no, you're not getting them. The players were not happy with this at all. Then he relented and said, yeah, he would give them bonuses, said how much the bonuses would be, and they were unhappy with the amount, so said, no, we're not having that, and then changed their minds and said, well, it's better than nothing, and we'll take that. But we don't want our club's owner in the dressing room again on match days at any point during the season.
Particularly with his trousers that high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, they didn't want him in no matter what height his trousers were. Malky Mackay sided with the players in this dispute. And Tan is believed to be most displeased with this act of insubordination from his employee. So he's now sacked... or placed Mackay's chief advisor on gardening leave and replaced him with a 23-year-old work experience kid who's friends with his son. And
who has experience at the club, Barry.
Oh, yeah, because he was helping to paint the ground during the summer. And now it's generally believed that he wants Mackay to quit.
So this is basically a provocation.
Yeah, he's just going to make... It's like I mentioned in the rumour mill...
I'm really gutted for Cardiff fans, but you wonder what he's going to do next.
Well, it is funny. It's like that episode of Seinfeld where George pretends to be handicapped to get a job.
Right.
And then when his employer's Mr. Tomasulu, the company president, finds out he isn't actually disabled, he makes his position so untenable in a bid to try to get George quit. Like, he puts his office in an underground bunker, barricades the door. George can only get in and out through an air vent. Then they sandblast the office, turn the heat up, try and sweat him out, and George just won't quit his job. So I imagine...
I hope Vincent Tan isn't listening to this.
Yeah. Well, there's also a suggestion they tried to poison George's food.
Wow.
But he's not having it, and he hangs in there, and eventually the company goes bankrupt. So while this is most distressing for Cardiff fans, the potential for amusement for everyone else is enormous.
But right. Presumably, given what happened with Kevin Keegan at Newcastle, Malky Mackay would win a case of constructive dismissal. So he's fine, whatever, right?
You'd think so, yeah. But his odds...
Wow, you confused me then.
Kevin Keegan, in his second spell at Newcastle, basically won a court case where he said he'd been forced to resign. The conditions had been made so impossible for him.
Kerbishley as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
But Mackay's odds against being the next Premier League manager to lose his job have gone from 25-1 to 2-1 favourite overnight.
What's Poyet?
I don't know.
In bookie veritas. And, of course, on a Welsh football note, something to cheer fans, but not necessarily in Cardiff, is the fact that we actually, on November the 4th, Barry, will be in Swansea doing a live podcast.
Okay.
It's after the South Wales Derby, so we're going to be there.
Tom. So they look after you very well. They're very good people.
Lovely people.
Yeah, they are lovely people. Mm. And Wine Street on a Saturday night is an experience.
We'll be there on a Monday morning. I wonder how it'll shape up. Anyway, Cardiff have Chelsea next. That's at Stamford Bridge after the break, of course. Who does Sunderland have? It's Swansea.
Swansea, then Newcastle,
they have the derby.
Yeah,
which, in a bizarre coincidence, was also Di Canio's second game in charge.
Yeah, well, winning derbies is very bad news for Sunderland managers, because Roy Keane was sacked, I think, 7 games later, and Di Canio lasted 10 games after winning a derby. Mm. So don't win that game, whatever you do.
Mm. Hey, should we finish off with a post or three? Hey, here's one for you, Jacob. Hammer Keith. Hello to you, Hammer Keith. Well, since we've heard from you. Says, before Mi Aladici puts himself forward for his underrated tactical genius, he should ask himself what type of manager starts a season with only one Premiership standard forward who generally misses a third of each season. Going on to build a side around him is even more stupefying. Desperate act, question mark, from a manager who didn't think to have a second striker at the club. Looks like dreadful planning. But then, those spontaneous Italians are like that, crazy.
Right, I saw that post and it really annoyed me. If you can't be pleased after beating Tottenham 3-0, which they haven't done for years, I can't remember the last time, maybe like 94, they'd beaten 4-1 at White Hart Lane. But it's not that West Ham didn't think to have another forward, they just couldn't get one. They didn't have the money and they were a bit foolish, I think, to spend it on Downing instead of that second striker. But they were trying to get one until the final day of the transfer window. Couldn't get Lukaku, couldn't get Barr. And they've had bad luck with Carroll.
Hmm.
So,
all right.
Come on.
Come on, Hammer Keith. Hey. Turtle news, Barry, after your terrapin story electrified
tortoise
the nation.
Story.
Well, it is a terrapin.
I've got a tortoise story.
Oh, go on then, Jonathan.
I walked across Corsica 2 weeks ago, and the first day we were going up the first hill.
Right.
And
did you go east to west or north to south?
East to west, much easier, much shorter.
Yeah.
And we saw a tortoise on the track.
Beautiful island, by the way.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
One of the most beautiful places.
Yeah. I mean, the hotel we stayed in, Jack's, absolutely stunning. But anyway, this tortoise. And we thought, oh, look, some of these pets escaped. And it climbed, actually, relatively quickly.
What was the name of the hotel you were staying in?
Limouette.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, well, there you go. Based listeners, if you're in Corsica.
Did it look as if it might have got there from Brixton?
The tortoise, yeah?
No. We took photographs of it. And it turned out it's a species of tortoise specific to Corsica called the Herman's tortoise, and it's endangered, and we've been incredibly fortunate to see them.
How fast did it move, Jonathan?
Oh, lightning. No, quite slowly. But still, climbing didn't seem to pose a problem. So I think they might be an animal that are as quick going uphill as they are on the flat.
Right, that's the second most surprising tortoise fact that I've heard this week. Here's the number one in tortoise shockers. Consortium 11. As someone who used to have a tortoise as a family pet, I can attest that they're a bunch of devious buggers. We had two. We had to turn our garden into a rather home county's version of Colditz to prevent them from burrowing under the fence. But Consortium goes on to say, it's practically illegal to import a tortoise into this country. And as they are not a native creature, unlike those lucky Corsicans, they are, as a result, fairly valuable. A tortoise bought from the reputable Tortoise Centre can go for as much as £650.
Well, that explains a lot, particularly why the couple putting up the sign.
I'm trying to find it again, and it might not have wandered
off.
Looks
so upset.
Mm. Consortium 11's point was very much that it might not have. It doesn't have to walk very far, because some light-fingered tortoise lover will pick it up and help it on its way before you can say Terrapin is a...
I could have just picked up that tortoise, popped it in my rucksack, pretended it was an ashtray, brought it back in, £650.
There you go. Bingo. Other post news. A lot of people excited by our mention of forward lines that adopt a collective name. We mentioned Magica at Napoli. Barry, you were... I think, was it you said about the great old Milan line, which I completely forgot to explain, was Grenoli. Gunnar Gren, Gunnar Nordahl, and Nils Liedholm, which is the classic Milan line. Looking at that, I'm thinking, yeah, Nils Liedholm, a great example of nominative indeterminism. No, if you have a striker called Nils, no? Anyway.
Oh, and he didn't really need his home, did he? And he spent most of his life in Italy rather than Sweden.
That's true. That's true.
Liedholm, not Liedholm. Liedholm.
Yeah, but still, I think off the cuff, that's fair. Then we had some entries. Some people understood the concept. Some people just put funny names together, like, you know, Costa Fortune, Katsuo Bushi, who says if Hilton went to PSG, it would be Paris Hilton. Yeah, all that kind of thing. Oh, and Coconuts, you know, mentioning Long Cox for Ireland. Yeah, but there were people who actually got the thing. You take the first two letters and you make something out of it. So Van der Vaart next says, offer the Spurs strike force as So Dead, Soldado, Defoe and Adebayor. Not bad. And Jamie Armitage, as a Liverpool fan, I'm gutted that Ngog, Ngu and Amu Express didn't take off. Rob Gibson, cheating a bit, says Chelsea last season was Mazakar and now it's Shazakar. And Alex O'Farrell says, on the striking partnership hybrids talk, how about putting together Republic of Ireland's Robbie Keane and Noel Hunt? Oh, actually, no, maybe we shouldn't do that. And on that note, I think we come to the end of today's quite far-reaching and broad-ranging pod. It's been ever so much fun. Almost don't want it to finish, but there will be another one along on Monday, and a pay-per-view talking about that whole Italy thing, which I completely forgot to mention. There's been so much stuff happening in Italy, but it is, accompanied by a yawn from Jonathan, it is that whole extraordinary territorial discrimination thing going on over there. Mad, mad. The fans now joining arms for the right to hate each other. It's quite touching, really. Anyway, that's all coming up in the pay-per-view, which will be up late Thursday, Friday morning. Yeah. Anyway, bye for now to you all. Thanks, Barry Glendinning. Thanks, Jacob Steinberg. Thanks, Jonathan Wilson. And thank you, producer Ben. See you soon.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.